like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guests today are Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron, team who wrote the screenplay for A Dog's Purpose, a film opening next Friday, January 27th, starring Dennis Quaid and directed by Lassie Hallström, director of such films as The Cider House Rules and What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Based on Cameron's best-selling novel of the same name, A Dog's Purpose tells the story of a dog who's reincarnated through several lives and how he's seeking to sort out his purpose through each of those lives. I haven't seen the film yet, but from what I understand, it's not only unusually dog-centric, as major studio releases go, but it's also distinctly pro-rescue. Today represents Cameron's fourth appearance on this show. The initial one came in 2010 when he initially published The Dog's Purpose, and Michon's first. Full disclosure, years ago, when I was a talent manager, I represented Michon, and Cameron and Michon have donated multiple times to WNF in support of Talking Animals, pledging for the week at the Kauai condo. So having dispensed with that, we'll discuss dogs, dog books, dog movies, and more with Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, I'll speak with Alana Rogers of Pig Advocates League, or PAL, who will provide an update on the so-called poke pigs. You may recall the 100-plus pigs that were seized in August from Darlin's Darlin's, the facility in Polk City, amidst numerous criminal charges for the treatment or mistreatment, in this case, of those pigs. Some have found homes, many are seeking homes, and we'll get into some of those details and others, including how this coming Saturday might help the sanctuary that's been housing many of the poke pigs later on in the show. By way of a sneak preview, I also want to quickly mention that 3 weeks from today, the WMF Winter Membership Drive starts. And on that very day, February 8th, I will be fundraising in a frenzy, most likely. I'm always assigned a towering goal that's almost impossible to reach in less than an hour's time. So I would like to ask you to consider making an early donation to our tip jar on WMNF.org. Just find Talking Animals on the WMNF schedule. Click on that. Go to the Talking Animals page, and there's the tip jar. Or you can just email me at dj@WMNF.org during today's show to arrange an early pledge with me. No pledge is too small or too large. Thank you. Right now, let's get to Catherine, Bruce, and dogs with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron to Talking Animals. Good morning, Catherine. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello.
Good morning.
Wow, sounding so peppy for 707 in the California. Excellent.
That's all I got.
Okay, well, I hope there's a bit more. We have a long way to go if we're going to be silent for the remainder of the interview, Bruce. But speaking of which, it's probably not overly reassuring when your interviewer admits in the very first question that he's completely befuddled. But A Dog's Purpose, the book, recently just reached the lofty position of New York Times bestseller. I'm holding the New York Times book review from a couple of Sundays ago. And at the top of paperback trade fiction and mass market fiction, there sits A Dog's Purpose. Yet
at number one.
Right, at the very top, yes. But, I mean, wasn't this book already a bestseller? How does this work? Explain to befuddled types.
Well, stop being befuddled. It's just good news. I mean, here's what it is. It's hard to get the word out about a book. Yes, this book was a bestseller, but the beautiful majesty of Hollywood is that they know how to get people's attention, thank God. And so many people are now discovering the two-book series. And, in fact, a lot of people don't actually know it's a two-book series. The other book is now starting to become a bestseller, which is The Dog's Journey, which is the second book in the A Dog's Purpose series.
All right, so it's actually pretty simple.
It's pretty simple.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, okay.
Books, I want to read it.
Yeah, well, I thought, okay, the book is kind of about dogs being reincarnated. I'm wondering, okay, how often is the book going to be reincarnated as a bestseller? That's kind of a neat trick, really.
We love that. We hope it's on the Hindu path.
Yeah, right.
So the central story of the book and presumably the movie is so distinctive and I'm sure no doubt accounts for the towering popularity that's made it a bestseller multiple times. So let's talk about that central story, particularly the real-life story behind that story. Catherine, take me back to that moment, something of an intersection maybe of hurt and leeriness from your experience of losing Ellie, and enchanted by the story you're hearing from this guy you were sort of increasingly enchanted by.
Well, this goes back to, you know, the early 2000s when I was, you know, busy ruining your life by being one of your clients, being in show business. And I had never had a dog as a child. I didn't have a dog until I was a grown-up, and I lost my dog, Ellie, who was a beautiful Doberman Pinscher, to that horrible disease that those big dogs get where their stomach slips, you know, and sometimes they can save them and sometimes they can't, and they weren't able to save her. And so it was, you know, unexpected. She was not old. And when I started dating Bruce, who's a, you know, comes from a dog family, they've always had dogs, I said, I can't do this again. I don't understand how people open their hearts to do this again. And I would have these moments sometimes where I would just, you know, burst into tears thinking about her, even a few years after it had happened. And I'd had one of those as we were driving in a car, and he's like, listen, I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you this story that maybe it will change your mind about why you should have another dog. And it was, you know, as writers, we don't just all of a sudden, books don't drop into our head fully formed, but just one time, it really did, and maybe Bruce, you can, you know, share how that helped.
In fact, Bruce, I would like to know to what extent that saga was rolling around in your noggin already versus like, oh my God, here's a moment where I better come up with something to steer this woman that I'm falling for, but we can't have a dog-free life. I gotta do something to spin her in the right direction here. So how fully formed was that story?
I think if I'd had to choose between the woman and dogs, I probably would have gone with the dogs. I mean, they've just never let me down. But I have to contrast to what usually happens. When I have a novel in my head, it's a concept, and then I add the characters, and I work my way through the plot, and I keep coming up with ideas that don't work, and I throw them aside. And never do I have what happened with A Dog's Purpose. With A Dog's Purpose, this story came to my head as if I was streaming it live. It came wholly formed, wrapped up, the characters, the scenes, the voices. It truly was a gift. And I was able to speak it out to Catherine. She says it was like attending a one-man show, and which would, you know, normally people would be throwing popcorn and jeering if I'm doing a one-man show. But in this case, she was enraptured. And at the end of it, there were tears in her eyes, and she said, you have to write that as a book. That's got to be a book.
So if I follow you, when you were on that drive, the story that you told her was the fully formed story that you've just described now? I mean, it was that was the first time you had actually told it in any form, and it came out that way?
It was the story of a, told from the point of view of a dog.
Yeah.
Who dreams and remembers all of his lives. And it was these four lives in the life of this dog and is searching for his purpose. And, you know, the boy and everything that happened, you know, it just really was the book.
But it's so interesting because, I mean, it makes me wonder, Bruce, that if that ride hadn't happened and that conversation hadn't happened, was the story already kind of percolating? And then when you decided, hey, I got to tell it right now to Catherine at this moment, it just happened to come out fully formed? Or was it pretty well kind of already coming together in your head? And just at that moment, it just happened to be the right moment to tell it in its full form?
No, it was literally that in a singular moment, I had an entire story, an entire book in my head.
Okay, so there wasn't even the seedling or anything prior to that car ride.
Oh,
wow!
So that's weird about it, and you know, we wish it would happen again because it's so much easier than now. We normally work out, but it just was that once.
Yeah.
And you can attribute it to, was it divine inspiration or what, you know, depending on what your viewpoint is we just, I felt like, you know, and that's why I said, I think, I didn't just say, you're going to write this as a book. I literally said in that moment, I said, honey, I think this is going to be a classic book. I think this, you'll write many things, but I think this one might be the one you're remembered for, because it's just, the story gets you to understand the eternal relationship that happens when two souls love each other, whether it's animals and people or two people. It really is this idea that, you know, there might be, as Shakespeare said, more than an earth that are dreamt of in your philosophy, that there's, like, you know, just mysteries that we can't understand. And you can't disprove the theory of a dog's purpose. It is true that dogs seem to have this amazing connection to us. They can't speak. For all we know, they've had multiple lifetimes. They met us before. They came back. They tried to help us. We don't know. You can't just prove it.
Catherine liked the book, liked the story so much she reincarnated as my wife.
Right. Well, there's that, and another part of the story, just we'll get back to the book and the movie in a sec, but another upshot of that car ride is not only did the story come out fully formed, but not too long after, introducing Tucker.
Yes, he's with us right now. And by the way, 7 a.m., as far as Tucker is concerned, is makeout time.
Oh, okay.
He's like so affectionate right now. He's sitting right here with us, and he's like, oh, you're actually paying attention to me at this time. This is the best thing that's ever happened.
And he thinks we're talking to him.
Oh, okay. Well, I like that. The show is called Talking Animals, so what I'm hoping will happen is that he will actually talk back at some point during the interview.
Well, but, he won't do that, but he did like your theme song.
Okay, well, there you go. So for those who haven't seen Tucker on Facebook or social media or elsewhere, give us a little description of what he looks like and how long he's been in your guys' lives.
Well, my husband often describes him as 24 pounds of suspect DNA. He's adorable, but he's a crazy mashup. He's part terrier. We found out he's part poodle. There's golden retriever in there. Like, he's a little yellow, very Benji-like substance, if you think all the way back to those movies. You know,
he's
just a scruffy, you know, you don't know what he is, but gosh, he's awfully cute.
Right. That's the cuteness thing. The rest, it doesn't really matter by comparison, probably.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Matter.
Okay, so the book was and is sort of magical and poignant and came off in this kind of amazing singular way and clearly struck a chord. In fact, one of the emails I've already gotten says, Dog's Purpose was my first quote-unquote dog book. Notes that I guess he or she won it on the show. That's good. And
aww.
Then it says, over 50 later, I'm still entertained by all. So I assume over 50 dog books later? I'm not sure. But anyway, So there's a quick early endorsement for the book. But writing a book and writing a screenplay are obviously very different enterprises, even when writing a screenplay based on your own book, in this case, Bruce. So knowing you necessarily had to jettison some of the breadth and depth of the book, what specific challenges did you two face when it came to writing the screenplay?
Oh, you know, you said it exactly right. It's jettisoning. It's throwing all your treasure belongings out of the covered wagon on your way west. I mean, you start out with what would be a 9.5-hour script if you wrote everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to get to, you know, 99 minutes. So there's a huge sacrifice. That's why Catherine always says you really need to read the series before you go to see the movie, because you're just going to miss out on. We just couldn't shove in everything having to do with all the characters. So the process is really one of elimination.
I mean, they become separate experiences. Reading a dog's book, A Dog's Purpose or A Dog's Journey is a richer, you know, more personal experience. And seeing the movie, however, is, especially for me, because of the animal work, and this applies to, you know, the theme of your show, the animals, the dogs in the film were trained not with treats, but with play and affection. So unlike a film like Marley and Me, to give an example, you know, if you look at close-ups in Marley and Me, the dog is often looking off camera and licking his lips because he's going to get a treat for doing his work. And on this set, the dogs, when they did their work, they got to play with their favorite toy, or they got to get a belly rub, or, you know what I mean? They were just, the photography and the work between the actors, the human actors, and the animal actors on the film is really not like any other film I've ever seen. And it was apparent on set because that was the way they chose to do it. And I think it's for people who love animals and want to see them responding as they would in life, they're going to be very happy to see a dog's purpose. So you know, there are moments in the film that aren't described at all. You know, it's really just that reaction shot of the dog. It's hard for us to admit as writers, but that's why that experience is so special, I think.
And to what extent did you guys lobby for, push for, whatever, that sort of approach to the dog on set and how they would behave and be rewarded and how that
this is where our producer Gavin Sloan, who we partnered very early with for this film, Gavin was a personal friend of ours, and I said, if there's anyone who will make this film and make it humanely and have it retain its message that is so pro-rescue, it would be Gavin, because he's an activist in all of those things. So it was because it was in his sure hands that's why this happened with this movie. And going all the way even into the release of the film, as my former manager, you'll be shocked to hear me say, I have never loved a movie studio more, because, well, I've never loved a movie studio, but I love Universal. They partnered with Best Friends Animal Society, which is such a great national organization. They're doing so much innovative stuff. They're doing advanced screenings where little rescues all over America on the 25th are having little advanced fundraisers, which is a ton of work, but they put it together. They're sponsoring individual adoption segments on TV shows all over the country this week. I mean, it's smart publicity, but it's the thing. It's like the Ben and Jerry's model. It's like, we could do well and do good, and Universal is actually doing that with this movie. It's amazing. They're doing things that no movie studio has ever done for a film.
First, let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guests are Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron, who wrote the screenplay for the movie A Dog's Purpose, based on Cameron's best-selling novel of the same name. The film, starring Dennis Quaid, opens next Friday, January 27th. If you'd like to ask Catherine and Bruce a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So, yeah, along those lines, I was going to say that sort of a familiar, if not even cliched, complaint by filmmakers and others that the studio didn't really promote their film. No one seemed to know about it. They could have done more in the marketing. I'm guessing, you guys won't be lodging that complaint because, man, I mean, all over Facebook and other social media and online, I mean, I was traveling recently, a couple different airports I was in, Dog's Purpose, TV. I was out last night, but just the night before on, I think, three different networks where I just happened to be bouncing around, Dog's Purpose commercial. I was driving around this year, not far from the radio station, and on like sort of a semi-abandoned area on walls, big posters, or maybe there were murals even. And I mean, geez, I don't know if the studio could be more thorough other than going like door to door and saying, hey, we have this movie coming out.
It's a revolution.
Well, I mean, I have to say that, you know, the test screenings have been off the charts. People love this movie. I got a Facebook message last night from someone who went to an early screening, and she said at the end of the movie, people cheered and stood up and clapped. And it's like, you know, I don't know. I go to movies, you go to movies. Especially at this time in our country, people want to think about bigger things, like, what is my purpose? What is the meaning of life? What are the things that connect us? You know, it's so great to get out of the realm of politics and fighting and get into what is real, what lasts, what matters, you know? And that's the larger theme of what this movie is about. The dog, and I have to say, the performance of Josh Gad as the voice of this dog's soul, you know, his voice is the same voice throughout the movie because, you know, even as he reincarnates, even when he's a girl, it's still his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh is just such a wonderfully funny, emotional guy. You know, it's an amazing performance.
Yeah, so I haven't seen the film yet, and I'm going to guess that most people listening haven't either. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about it since you guys clearly have. First of all, we all know people who've lost dogs. Many of us are people who've lost dogs. And if you have enough, say, Facebook friends, sadly, you might see a post almost daily from someone who just had to say goodbye to their dog and they're heartbroken. So will the movie be soothing for people with those sorts of broken hearts, or will it play more as a tearjerker?
Oh, I think it is not a tearjerker. I think it's moving. I think that that there are scenes that touch me so deeply that I had tears in my eyes, but I wasn't crying out of sadness. And I do think this is a Dog's Purpose. The whole Dog's Purpose series is about true love and our real friends, and those are very deep, profound. Truth that can really help guide us and really give us joy.
Yeah.
So for me the whole message of A Dog's Purpose is so uplifting and so positive that I think that everyone who sees the movie will walk out saying that it was a great experience.
And it's just, you know, I mean, it has evolved over the 7 years that the book has been out. People give this book to people when they have lost a dog. So, you know, it turns out that the purpose, if you will, of the book has been actually the reason that Bruce made up the story and told it to me, is it gets you to see that there's probably nothing your dog would want more at the end of their life than for you to have another dog. That they think you having a dog is so important that has been their purpose, that they don't want you to be without that.
Well, it's so interesting because I absolutely get that that's the purpose of A Dog's Purpose. I also know people who cried a lot while reading the book, and I know that some of those people just tend to struggle with sort of powerful feelings of loss just below the surface. And so some I've heard from anticipate sort of an evening of tears if they see this movie. So it sounds like what you're saying is there might be tears, but it's going to be more joyous and uplifting whether you unfortunately recently maybe lost a dog or have had that experience at some point or not.
Well, look, I think, you know, you again go back to Marley and Me. For me, Marley and Me was just like, that's the story of somebody who has a dog and then we're going to kill that dog. And there's nothing else. There's no takeaway. Whereas this has you start to wonder, could it be true? Is that dog that I saw at the rescue event, maybe there's something in the glint of that dog's eye that reminds me of Ellie or reminds me of another dog that I had once. Is it possible? Could it be? It's such a heart-opening concept, you know?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And again, I just gearing up for this show. And even this morning, the cool guy that hosts the Wednesday morning music show that nice enough usually invite me on to talk briefly about Talking Animals. And we were talking a little bit about this. And he hadn't read the book yet, but he knows people who had. And just what he had heard is that, you know, people did tend to cry in reading the book. And so I was kind of making a similar point to what you're making, Catherine, because I haven't seen the film, but I've certainly read the book. And that it's the whole idea of the reincarnation element and therefore sad to say goodbye to a dog, but you might see that dog or a cat even later is and should be kind of uplifting.
And I think if this is most people's idea of spirituality, I think most people believe there's more to this world than what we can see. And, you know, whether it's heaven or we come back to Earth in another life, you know, everyone has a different notion of what that means, but this book really gets you into the feeling that there is more to life than just this one trip.
So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guests are Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron, who wrote the screenplay for the movie A Dog's Purpose, based on Cameron's best-selling novel, also called A Dog's Purpose. The film opens next Friday, January 27th, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So let's take, we have one of our callers been holding for a bit, let's include them. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron.
Yes, thank you very much for such a sweet and inspiring show, and I can't wait to see this movie. I heard Duncan say that you were involved with the Cider House Rules. And that is one of the best movies about the abortion issue and women's right to choose, and I recommend it's touching, it's incredible, it's beautiful. I'd like to suggest that a movie, it might have to be animated like Zootopia, that would show how human domination, exploitation, vivisection, habitat destruction, poisoning, cruelty of all kinds, how it looks from the viewpoint of native species, kind of like an Animal Farm movie maybe, or Watership Down, because right now our species is just taking the whole planet away from all other animals, and it hasn't been viscerally represented like an Avatar-type movie from the animal's point of view of how horrible it feels to them. For example, dolphins and manatees in the Gulf to have.
Well, I'm really glad that you raised this subject. First, a correction: Cider House Rules. We were not involved with that. Was directed by the same director who directed A Dog's Purpose. Lasse Hallström directed Cider House Rules.
Oh.
But the reason I'm happy to hear this topic is because my next novel, which is out on May 7th, is called A Dog's Way Home, and it addresses breed-specific legislation, which it concerns the story of a dog who is banned from Denver by breed-specific legislation, taken hundreds of miles away, and decides that there's a mistake here, and she's going to make her way back to her family through the Colorado Rockies. And it's a great story, great adventure story, if you will. But breed-specific legislation is just one element of what you're talking about. But it really is it's a real problem because it makes no sense. Innocent dogs who are on the basis of their breed and it's not even a real. There's not a pit bull, for example, is not a real dog in terms of. It's like saying retriever. It's a classification of several kinds of dogs, and so it's arbitrary. There are obvious pit bulls who they decide are not pit bulls. There are dogs that are not pit bulls that are classified as pit bulls. The whole thing's a mess, and it does show a problem when it comes to intervention between when people try to intervene in animals' lives.
Yeah.
Caller, thank you for your input. We're gonna move along here, but thank you so much for your call. So, Bruce, what is the name of that book? Is it A Dog's Way Home? Did I hear you say
it's A Dog's Way Home. It'll be out May 7th.
Great. I wish you could just be a bit more prolific, though. That's the only thing that seems to be holding you back.
So lazy.
Yeah. So, let me read one of the emails that came in, because sometimes they're edgy or amusing. This emailer says, or texter actually says, this movie sounds like the Kevin Spacey film disaster, Nine Lives. I hope A Dog's Purpose is better. I can't unsee Nine Lives. So.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a fan either, and it has nothing to do with this movie. You know, the thing about the whole A Dog's Purpose franchise, you know, both of the books, is if you would like a little proof of concept, you can go on Amazon where it has, I don't know, 3,000-something reviews, and there are very, very, very few books on Amazon that have thousands of reviews that have a solid 5-star rating, and this is one of them. You know, The Help doesn't have that. You can't find a book on Amazon that has such a high rating, and it really is because people find this concept of A Dog's Purpose to be so uplifting, so comforting, so helpful. And by the way, if people, you know, talk about the deep emotions and it might give you some tears, but it's also hilarious. The dog is really funny. The dog has really very dog-like observations about people and their lack of conversations about chicken and other things. You know, I mean, the dog is just a dog.
I think that's great. And again, who better than you two guys to get the dog-like authenticity of both the story and the dog dialogue?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
when I set out to write A Dog's Purpose, my goal, and this was tough, was to write from the point of view of a real dog. And that, I mean, the dogs have a limited vocabulary and a limited understanding of the complexities of their lives, what's going on all around them. It's a little tough for a dog to figure out sometimes. They have to think metaphorically. They have to watch us, their humans, for all their clues. So A Dog's Purpose is the story of a real dog.
Yeah, the Kevin Spacey movie he was referencing is like, that's a cartoon those are cartoon animals. Those are animals who understand all the words, or who, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The dog in A Dog's Purpose only understands words that are like car ride and, you know, chicken, and, you know, words that they've heard that they associate with a certain concept that they're very excited about. So,
Yeah, I remember when the book first came out, Bruce, you and I talked about that because, yeah, one of the things I was really struck by that is you got into that dog and into that dog's perspective and then shifting as other dogs evolved. But that's something you could hear about, say, oh, yeah, I could probably write from a dog's perspective. But
oh, my God, it's really hard.
Yeah, it's really hard to do well. I mean, people can do it, and people have done it, and it's like, ugh, okay, that's not really good, or that's kind of half-baked or whatever. But that's, I think, back to the things that was earlier befuddling me, and it just is less so now. The reason this thing has been a bestseller multiple times is if you're a dog person, that's exactly right. That's what you assume your dog is thinking and doing.
The simple element of, and this is very clear in the film as well, and I'm happy about this, much of what the dog perceives about what's going on in the world is sense. So when the people get nervous or sweaty, the dog smells that. Or when people are feeling affection, the dog smells that. You know, and I think anyone who has a dog is like, well, how do they know? Why do they know that I'm sad or I'm scared or I'm feeling sick? You know, they perceive the world very cogently, but not as we do.
And I remember, too, it's been a few years, obviously, since I've read the book, but I remember, too, that I think it was this one. Actually, maybe now that I'm saying this, maybe it was A Dog's Journey, but... But as you're saying that, Captain, a real vivid thing was where this horrible kid enters the picture, and the dog immediately senses this kid is trouble. And
and that's the character of Todd, and that character's in the film, and the dog has, you know, you've seen it sometimes. I was hiking with my dog Ellie, the one that I lost. Ellie, we used to hike in Runyon Canyon, and there was a guy up there who was a raver. He was real crazy. And she would push me away from him. She knew that person wasn't right, you know?
Mm.
It wasn't even when he was raving. It was just she knew that guy was not somebody she wanted me to be near.
Interesting, yeah. All right, so we're in our final moments here, but let's take at least one more call while we can. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron.
Hi, this is Willie.
It's you. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm really looking forward to the movie. I heard about it while I was in Chattanooga. I just got back to Tampa. I lived here for 25 years. But for the last 9 years, I've been in the mountains of Alabama with a Great Pyrenees and my girlfriend. Uh-huh. And you know what a Great Pyrenees is?
Oh, they're wonderful.
Yeah. Big, big, big white dog and 125 pounds. And we parted ways, my ex and I, just 7 months ago. And I came back to Tampa. And I don't have the dog, and his name's Hero. So I have dreams at night with Hero. I miss that 9 years of walking the dog, feeding the dog, loving on the dog, him loving on me. I miss that almost, if not more than my ex, you know. And I loved her, and I was the one who parted with them. It was the right time to do it, but you know. Hearing you all three of you talk about consciousness of the dog, I can tell you that when I think back to, you know, even right now, think about Hero, I know nobody could convince me that that dog doesn't think about me occasionally. You know what I mean? And the love that is connecting me and that dog and me, I don't think that goes away, even, you know, just like when my mom passed 16 years ago. I still feel the connection. I still have dreams about her, and they're always reassuring dreams. So I just want to say to you two writers and you, the host, I just want to say God bless you for bringing this topic up. It inspires me. I was driving home from work. I work early, and I just finished work, and I was listening to WMNF. As I did the 25 years I lived here. Now I'm back and I'm listening again. And you've made my day. and I really appreciate it.
Wow. Well, I dare say you've probably made ours, or at least you made mine, but that's really really sweet, and I hope when you're ready, you'll bring a dog into your new life back here.
Thank you, man.
All right, thank you.
I gotta let the dust settle a little.
Yeah, I'm sure. I got you. All right, thanks again for your call.
God bless you all. Bye.
All right, thank you. So one last quick question, I guess. Clearly, it seems like you guys get along pretty well. What was it like collaborating, though? I mean, who does what, and how do you navigate almost the inevitable sort of creative, I don't know if we should go that way in that scene, or really should they say this here, or how does that work with you two?
Well, we have a pretty simple system. We actually worked with our therapist to come up with a set of rules for how we work together on joint projects, because we each have projects of our own as well. And it's very simple, but, you know, this project is Bruce's baby because it comes from his book. So, you know, when you have two people, you need somebody to have the last word. And so when we have a project like this, you know, Bruce gets to be the last word in deciding on an issue if we're seeing it different ways. But we trade drafts back and forth, and I think it helped in our writing partnership that we've both written solo projects. There's not a sense of like, one doesn't, it isn't like we're leaning on each other so much.
Right.
That, you know, don't have a separate life.
Sure. You could have each written the screenplay independently, but you did choose to collaborate on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who does what, though? I mean, are literally like one of you writing a draft and the next person's responding, or are there sort of complementary skills of, okay, I'm going to sort of be...
You know, we invent the process over again with every project because every project's slightly different.
Yeah.
It's exactly that. A person produces the first draft, hands it to the second person for notes, goes back to the first person for another draft. Other times, it's a redrafting. One time, I wrote the outline, handed it to Catherine. She first drafted it and took it from there. So it's always different.
Yeah.
And that kind of keeps the process fresh for us.
Well, it seems like it's worked, and it seems like now the proof's going to be in the pudding. And again, that's next Friday, January 27th. It's A Dog's Purpose. We've been speaking with Catherine Michon and Bruce Cameron, and there is a website, adogspurposemovie.com, and anywhere you go on Facebook, it seems like there's cool references and people's experiences, and I don't know if it's still possible you can make your own poster incorporating your own dog.
I was going to say, so many animal lovers listening, when you go to adogspurposemovie.com, you can upload any picture of your pet and turn it into the poster for the film, and a lot of the posters that you're seeing around, those are just people's pets. They're not dogs that are in the film. If you see the big golden, you know, and he's on a billboard, that's Trip, who plays Bailey. But the other dogs are just real dogs, and it's so much fun. And part of the ownership, this movie really does feel like it belongs to everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that next Friday, you know, if people are moved by what the film is about, and also that it's so pro-rescue, I hope they will go opening weekend, because I'd like to see Universal get rewarded for doing really the best launch of any animal-themed film I've ever seen. I'm truly grateful they're doing.
Well, it sure seems like people are excited. Well, let me just quickly add an email that just came in that might be a good one to sort of end on. It says, I can't wait to see the movie. I love Mr. Cameron's books. Thanks for continuing to open people's eyes to the magic of dogs. So that might be the furthest point at which to leave this. So, Catherine and Bruce, thank you so much for joining us on Talk Animals. Can't wait to see the movie. Again, next Friday, January 27th, it opens. And good luck.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks again. In a few moments, I'll speak briefly with Alana Rogers of Pig Advocates League to get an update on the poke pigs and hear about a workday Saturday at the sanctuary where many of those poke pigs are being housed temporarily. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece from Matt Bronger called Panda Butler in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Do you guys know what the secret is? It's a book that was trumpeted by Oprah that is very big in Los Angeles, very big with actor spiritualists, I like to call them, which is basically when you just want the universe to give you everything you want in a really selfish manner, and you want to be a star. You want to be an Entertainment Weekly, and you pray for the wrong things. That's all that is. But I'm not knocking it. Look, I think positive visualization is a handy tool, and it's good. It's good to stay positive. When you're negative all the time, it doesn't help you at all. But I don't necessarily believe in the secret, but I don't know. It might work. Asking the universe for something might work. So I'm going to try it right now. I'm going to try the secret and see if it works, okay? So I am going to throw out right now what I want from the universe and hope that I get it. So here we go, okay? Panda butler. That's all I want. I want a panda that is also a butler. That's it. I want a panda that walks on his hind legs and often fails and tries to be my butler. Walks in while I'm watching TV with a tray of champagne flutes, which he will drop. Granted, he will drop them, but he'll try. Walks in. It's okay, Clive. You're still my man. High five. Actually, any bear that won't kill me. That's all I want, right? I will rubberize my home wherever he wants, right? Just as long as he does. Like, can you imagine just sitting and watching TV with a bear that is also sitting and his little belly is going up and down with his breathing? His bear belly. You can put stuff on it, like a tray of cheese and crackers. And he occasionally just yells and you love it because it feels like commentary, right? You're right, dude. Jersey Shore is the end of all civilization. High five.
That was Matt Bronger with a piece called Panda Butler, taken from his album Shovel Fighter. Now on to my conversation with Alana Rogers and her latest update on the so-called poke pigs. Let's welcome Alana Rogers back to Talk Animals. Good morning, Alana.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Anytime.
So we've spoken obviously a couple of times before today's show about the so-called poke pigs, but for those listening who maybe didn't hear one or both of those updates or just aren't familiar with the case overall to begin with, maybe you could just give us a quick sort of summary of what those pigs are and how they came to need our help.
Sure. Back mid last year, PETA had done an undercover investigation at a animal rescue called Darlin's Rescue Ranch in Polk City, Florida. It was found that there was major animal neglect and abuse. The sheriff's office then stepped in and seized all of the animals. They were taken to animal control after a court proceeding to determine ownership of the animals. They were officially removed from Darlin's custody, and eventually transferred over to Pig Advocates custody. We then had them all transferred up to Rooterville, a sanctuary up in Melrose, Florida, which is kind of between Jacksonville and Gainesville, as a temporary home, just to work on vetting and getting them healthy and figuring out their dispositions, et cetera, and getting them to new homes. So that is where we are now. They've been there since mid-September. Some have been moved to new homes, and some are still waiting. We're kind of waiting out winter.
Tell us, Alana, give us a sense of where the numbers are relative to the number of pigs that were seized back in August and then the number that have found homes thus far and therefore presumably the remaining number that are still looking for homes.
Sure. Initially, there were 138 pigs that were part of the seizure. Three were euthanized immediately prior to even getting to animal control. After that, the number that was actually transferred over for custody to Pig Advocates League was 119, I believe, was the official number.
Okay.
Of that number, though, there have been several that have had to be euthanized, and it was done very humanely, due to various health issues. They've had pneumonia from worms that have migrated into their lungs, major joint issues from malnutrition. We've had cancers. We've had a pig whose stomach ruptured from eating sand because it was starving for so long. So we've lost several pigs. We have placed the number of homes that we have is about 60, and we need roughly about 30 placements still. And the 30 placements are for some of the larger pigs. We have two farm pigs that need a home still, and then there's several crosses kind of mixes, Potbelly mixes, that need homes, and also a few special needs pigs that, you know, have some joint issues, et cetera, that, you know, require pain medication. But, I mean, the pigs are, they're doing great now. They look great. They act great. They're much better towards humans now. I mean, they're, it's a remarkable difference.
So the 30 that still need the placement that you mentioned, those are the 30 that are living at Rooterville?
Correct.
Okay. So here's one question for people listening who, again, may be hearing this as an update or may be hearing about this for the first time. But let's say someone's listening who has the kind of house or setup or whatever that they could actually accommodate one or more pigs. What's the process? How would they go about saying, hey, you know what, I could help out. I could take a couple of pigs. How do I apply or how do I get started?
The process is still to reach out to Pig Advocates League, and you can do that via email through palpigs@gmail.com or through our Facebook page, which is Pig Advocates League, to reach out to us. And we are the ones that are handling the placements and the screenings, et cetera. There's an adoption application. You know, we are screening homes. Obviously, we don't want these pigs to go from bad to worse.
Yeah.
But we are still handling it. So they would reach out to us directly, and we would be happy to, you know, show them photo albums of available pigs and set up, you know, a tour at Rooterville for them to meet the animals and see who would be the best fit for them.
And on a either overlapping or separate note, it sounds like the Rooterville folks have just been magnificent.
Yes.
It'd be great if anyone listening, whether they can or intend to adopt a pig or not, but just maybe has some time on Saturday to make a little trek up to Melrose. Tell us a little bit about the work day and what sort of planned and what kind of help you need.
Yep, we are doing a work day up at Rooterville. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and that's Eastern time. There is an event linked on our Facebook page with some more details. Basically, it's just going to be little odds and ends that need to be done there, such as, you know, there's tons of trees there that need leaves raked. There's water dishes that need, you know, actual cleaning and scrubbing. I mean, there's just a list of little things that, you know, they can't do on a day-to-day basis just because, you know, there's only so many staff members and there's obviously a lot of animals. There's also going to be, we're going to do a cookout that will be a full vegan menu. You know, so I hope it will be a lot of fun. It seems
yeah.
There's a lot of interest in it. So
that's great.
It should be some fun.
Yeah, no, if you've got some time.
Place.
Yeah, it seems like a great way to spend some time and kind of these days people are maybe looking for ways to feel good about things or good about themselves.
Yeah, and Rooterville's awesome. I mean, literally.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It looks like it from the pictures.
Yeah. They're just walking around. So
cool.
It's fun.
All right, Alana. Well, thank you again. And again, to reach Alana or others there, it's palpigs@gmail.com or, again, the Facebook page to search for Pig Advocate League. So thank you again for joining us, and thanks for all your great work.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Loray and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the Stellar WNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt right now. We'll do a quick new animal news and announcement. First, just want to say, sort of ties in, because this Frank Knox, our beloved helper here, wears so many hats, host of the Retro Jukebox, but does a zillion things behind the scenes to contribute to WNF, and also brings in a gorgeous sweet dog, Charlie, every Wednesday and some other days too, probably. Underwent some surgery, went really well, and we're really encouraged by the initial reports, so want to wish him well and a speedy, speedy recovery and for him to join us back here at WNF ASAP. The other main story, of course, in the animal news realm is the Ringling Brothers announcement that they're shutting down the circus. So I've been really struck by the sort of range of responses to that. Obviously, a lot of jubilation on activists and people who've done what we and others have done to sort of get the word out about the abuse of animals. But there's also other issues about what's going to happen to those animals, having the elephants retired some time ago. And obviously, hundreds of people will be unemployed come May, etc. So we are going to actually convene a panel discussion representing, I think, hopefully a pretty decent array of viewpoints on this next Wednesday show. So hope you'll join us for that. All right, let's jump in to Name That Animal Tune. Please only participate if you have won something from us in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt for the first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and it correctly identifies this animal song. So Name That Animal Tune. There are two different animal song titles for the song, arguably. I will accept either one on Name That Animal Tune. We will take any guesses that might come in off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Rob Lawyer is up next with 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next week with that panel discussion about ringling and all the different sort of viewpoints that seem to be expressed on social media, online, and elsewhere. And meanwhile, visit TalkingAnimals.net where you can find audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast, iTunes podcasts as well, links to Facebook pages, Twitter feeds, and more. So I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio, handpicked, etc. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.